Wayne Anderson is making the music of Wayness, and he's connected with The Antidote. It's great to have you here.
Thanks, Dave. It's awesome to be here.
You got to help me out with something. During this talk, am I calling you Wayne, or is it going to be Wayness?
Oh, Wayne is fine. At least I don't think I have that much of an ego. It was really just kind of a funny name that I wanted to use for something for a while anyway.
I know it's difficult to choose an artist name. So how did you decide to go by Wayness?
Well, one reason is, and this isn't a slam on anybody that just uses their own name, but I didn't want to sound like a country artist or a typical CCM artist. And I liked artists that had kind of cool names, and especially if they were kind of spinoffs on their own name, I think that's kind of cool. But I had a friend who's actually no longer with us. His name was Kenny Winchester, but we used to hang out many years ago. I would give him rides to church and stuff, more when we were probably single or when I was newly married. And one day we were headed to a restaurant or leaving church or something. And I said, "Hey, you ready to go, Kenny?" And he said, "Okay, Wayness." And I thought for a split second, I said, "You just crammed Wayne and anus into one word." And he just started laughing hysterically. And I was like, "I'm going to have to save that for something." And I ended up telling him that a few years ago before he passed away. And he thought that was hilarious. So I don't get a great response with everybody that understands what it sounds like because it rhymes with anus. But for me, it's kind of a funny thing, and I don't mind it, you know, describing me.
Perfect. You know, I did some checking and I found out that your first song is Smokin'. Something about it is that it doesn't have anything to do with weed. So maybe you should give us the story.
Oh, yeah. It's actually my second song. Smokin' was, you know, sometimes you try and communicate an idea in a song and it doesn't necessarily communicate when you hear it. But the general idea was my generation, which I'm sure is probably close to yours, Dave. We grew up hearing the phrase, "Dude, what have you been smoking?" when you made a stupid decision, like went $50,000 into debt for a car. "Dude, what are you smoking?" Just something like that on making a bad decision. And I kind of, a friend of mine, his name is Ryan McDonald, his voice is the one that's speaking on the phone. I sent him a message one day. I said, "Hey, I need you to say these words and I'm going to put them in the song just as you say them." And so he sends me the message and I dump it in there and edit it up and everything. But basically, I tried to kind of give it that drug or weed reference, but it, to me, it was kind of more about decision making. And I figured it could be something that people could kind of latch on to if they're paying. Not everybody pays attention to lyrics. You know, a lot of us, we pay more attention to the melody of a song than the lyrics. But "What Are You Smoking" is the theme of it. And I just kind of tried to have fun with it while kind of sticking to a theme. So I don't know if it comes across, but that's kind of the idea.
It seems like they often just have fun making your songs. Is it always fun?
For me, I think it is. As you've kind of noticed with the limited stuff I've done so far, it's not really praise and worship oriented, even though I want to have a faith aspect on what's going on in the song. As you, mm-hmm. you may have either heard a verse being quoted in the song or a part of a chorus or bridge that has, you know, a hymn or something like that in it. To me, that's important, I feel like, because I think that as believers, for me, and also being a fan of Christian music growing up for so many decades of my life and the impact that it's had on me. And I've just wanted that to be, instead of just making music because I feel like doing it, I feel like with our limited time on earth, I feel like, you know, if I'm going to make something that somebody's going to listen to after I die, I feel like it needs to say something.
Well, tell me, were you making music before Wayness?
Mainly just with some friends in a basement or a church worship band type setting. And there's nothing wrong with that. And I don't want to, you know, come across as that anything is wrong with that, because you can learn a lot of things, develop relationships. I could not have recorded my music without those relationships, because I am not a techie, geeky person. I was cut. Well, but that and YouTube, you know, constantly asking friends, "Okay, how do I do this? How do I do this? How do I do this?" For me, it all kind of came to a head during COVID. spending time by yourself and learning how to do stuff, to me, that was kind of the point where I was like, okay, I need to do this to learn for myself and be productive. And of course, none of us wants to have to go back to a time period like that, but that's that was kind of what's going through my head at the time.
Gotcha. Well, last year, Wainess released a new single called Oh My My Semper Fi, and it's a tribute to those in the military. So I've been wondering why you wrote the song. Like, was serving part of your background?
To answer your question, yes. I was a Navy squid. That's supposed to be a loose term for a Navy sailor. I was in for a couple of years. It was not going to be a career for me, but my dad was a Marine during the Vietnam War era. And I felt like while he's still alive, he's actually going to turn 80 here next month. And I felt like in the last couple of years, and this is not a style of music that my dad likes at all, and I had to basically know that going into it, that, you know, I can put my heart and soul into something that he just may not be that much into. And I totally get it. He comes from a different era of music, but it was kind of a salute for my dad, but also to Marines in general. Because Semper Fi was a phrase I heard a lot growing up from my dad, and I probably didn't really grasp what it meant until I became an adult, and I would see him, you know, if you're in a restaurant, you see some military people, you know, pointing at each other's, you know, hats and thanking them for the service and that type of thing. But the Semper Fi meaning, you know, always faithful, just got me really thinking, what, there's nothing more Semper Fi than giving your life for something you believe in. And I felt like that was worthy of trying to make a song out of. And I did end up playing it for my dad on Father's Day last year. And he kind of nodded his head and listened to whatever. I honestly didn't, you know, I told my wife, I said, if he doesn't like it, I am not going to be heartbroken, because I really didn't write the style of music for him. But yeah, I think that he knew that it was special to me. And there's actually a, after the guitar solo in the song, as there's some guitar feedback kind of fading out, you hear a voice saying Semper Fi twice. That man was in Vietnam with my dad. Wow. And he actually passed away a few months after I recorded the song. And I wanted that to be in his name. I couldn't tell you his full name. I know he went by the nickname of Mac, because my dad would always talk about him. And they actually did meet up a few times over the last few years. But anyway, that's just some of the details of it. I wanted it to be something special, because I know that if somebody hears a song like that and they have a, not necessarily a Marine in their life that passed away, but a military member, I think it could be something that could be special. And that was why I wanted to do it.
You sort of mentioned a bit about this. There is a line in the song that brings in John 15:13. There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. But here's something, right, I want to challenge you with. Christ was a pacifist. Do you think he was intending to have that verse fit with the military or a war setting?
Not necessarily. I think it could also be, and you know, if you're a first responder, if it's a, you know, a police officer stepping in the line of fire to protect one of his fellow officers or military, or, I mean, I think it has multiple contexts. It doesn't have to be war related. And I know what you mean in terms of people using it in a certain context, but I think it can be sacrificial, because I think we all probably know people that did join the service with genuine motives, that they wanted to serve their country, not because of anything other than, I feel like this is my duty. I think most of us, at least in mining your generation, still respect that idea. And I think it's becoming less of a thing, but I think the people that hear the song and understand the message will appreciate it.
I've asked this of a few artists. Now I want to hear what you have to say. Why make music? I mean, what do you get out of it personally?
For me, I'm not a young guy. For many years, pretty much since high school, before I ever played an instrument, I always went to Christian concerts specifically. I went to non-Christian concerts, but the ones that drew me in my era of me, I know I'm going to date myself when I mention Guardian and Bride and Deliverance and a lot of the 80s, early 90s metal scene was sort of what really brought me into Christian rock, Christian metal. And it was the lyrics that really gave me, I think, a foundation of, okay, this isn't just lay me down to sleep stuff. This is, you know, real life situation stuff. And it really impacted me, I think, at a time that I needed to hear it. As far as why making music, for me, I think I got tired of not doing it, honestly. Because I think I kind of answered this question myself for myself a couple of years ago when I started doing Wayne's music, is I think that, and this applies to everybody in every stage of life, if you have dreams and desires in your heart to do and you don't do it, those dreams will die with you and nobody will know about it. And I think you have to answer that question, whether your desire is to write a book, if it's to go to school, if it's to be a school teacher, whatever it is, if it's a contribution to the human race and you do nothing about it, I think you have to live with that. And for me, as the years went on and I felt like, you know, I really want to do this, but I was kind of waiting on somebody to help me. And I think I'd really, like I said, I got to the point where it's like, you know, I'm really tired of going to concerts and wishing I was doing it, to where the point to where I get tired of watching other people do it. I mean, if you go and you watch a certain sport and you really can't enjoy it because you want to get in and play, to me, it's that same type of thing. And obviously, you have to live with your own limitations. I mean, if you're 60 and you want to be an astronaut, that's probably not going to happen for you. But, you know, in terms of if there's some kind of dream you have that you ultimately think God put in your heart to do and you're not doing it, then you're not really living. And I know that's probably been said in a lot more spiritual ways in the past, but I felt like that was kind of came to a head in my life where I was like, look, I'm tired of not doing this. And I'm going to keep being tired unless I do it. And whether it's ugly, whether it's imperfect, and if you're waiting for a crowd of people to come and cheer you on, a lot of times that's not going to happen. So you really have to have a desire inside to say, okay, if nothing else, I'm going to do this for me. And God knows my motives, so I'm going to do this. And if people cheer me on, great. But if they don't, then I'm still going to do it. So that was part of my reason there and a strong part of it.
You've spoken a couple times about going to concerts, seeing Christian bands play. Do you play shows?
I did one about 2 years ago that was really kind of very sloppy, but my goal is to play live, yes. Only reason I laugh is because I made the mistake of not hiring a real sound guy. And anybody who is in a band who knows what it's like to not have a sound guy, somebody who knows what they're doing, can know it can be awful. And it was awful, but it was fun. I plan to do it more, but I haven't done it a lot in this format.
Well, I got to tell you, I really think that you should stop making music and go for a career change. You need to move on to being a radio preacher. You played that role in your song, The Reverend Wayne's Exhortation. Why in the world did you do it?
Yeah, I was actually wondering about that when I sent it to you. I was like, he may have questions about this. Okay, this is going to tie into the song Die Some or Die. I recorded Die Some or Die. I'm kind of a griper with hot weather, and in Georgia it gets very humid. I've always had jobs where some part of it was outside, and I've always found myself griping about hot summer weather, and usually August I am just like, okay, I'm ready for fall, and I thought, in the whole songwriting process, I was like, well, that's not going to be very interesting to write a song about not liking summer weather. So I thought, what if summer was a girl in a relationship and it started off great, like the beginning of summer, but then it got really bad and the relationship needed to die. And that's the thesis for Die Some or Die, is that I recorded Die Some or Die with that idea. And after I recorded it, I thought, you know, I don't know that this idea is really coming across. So you know who Clank is.
Oh, yes.
His sidekick, Pat Cervedio, he helped me put that together with the Reverend Wayne's part. I hit him up one day and just said, hey, I want to put a storyline together. I need some sound effects. I need something to make this sound kind of creepy. And so what you hear in the Reverend Wayne's Exhortation is me supposed to be, you know, a Southern preacher kind of giving his testimony about meeting a girl. And that relationship really starts to take a bad turn. I really just wanted to hit the point that the relationship needed to die because it was turning the person into a different, person that he didn't need to be. And I say the term, my season of summer needed to die. It was basically kind of what I tried to communicate by the end of that. And so this might be an embarrassing admission, but I grew up listening to a lot of Carmen. And he was always...
I am embarrassed.
Yeah. He was always a great storyteller. And that was my favorite part of the things that he did, more than the music that he did. And so I'm sure that that probably affected me some. Every time I thought about putting that Reverend Wayne's thing together, I thought, well, it's kind of like telling a story, and if people get it, great. If they don't, whatever. But that's where that came from. And I was just trying to kind of make it a story, make it interesting. One day I may wish that I never did it, but I've got a pretty positive response from it from most people that have heard it.
You recorded three versions of Die Summer Die. There's the regular one, an acoustic, and then the Sunburn mix. Why was it so important to you to do three versions?
The original version, who I'm going to give a shout out to my audio engineer, Andrew Simmons, who does a phenomenal job mixing. He's actually somebody I've never met. Where we live in the age where you can send, audio files around, and it's a great option for when you don't have time or the money to actually go to a studio and you learn to record stuff at home. But I just give him a shout out. The three versions were, the first one was just to get the song out there, wanted to get it out there. I mean, it was just, for me, a rush of adrenaline to see your own song on iTunes and being able to share it with people. And I was like a kid in a candy store. I was like, oh my gosh, I have something out there that's recorded that people can listen to. And, that was the little kid in me coming out. Then later in the year, I put out Smokin', and then I kind of retracted back to around the year that it was about a year since Die Summer Die had come out. And I thought, I'm going to do Reverend Wayne's. I'm going to get Pat to do me a remix of this Die Summer Die, and I'll do the acoustic version. It was just kind of my, way of trying to promote it. And some people like acoustic based music. I'm not very good at it in the sense of making it very interesting, but I know some people will understand things better in a lighter, format in acoustic. So that was kind of the reason I did that.
Now, those last couple tracks were fun, but you don't seem to mind getting into serious stuff. I'd like to hear about Wander. It comes across as a true story.
Yes, it is. A mentor friend of mine, he was actually my best man at my wedding. His name is Steve Wiggins. That man is in his 70s now. We had met at my church many, many years ago, and he had told me his testimony probably more than once before it really sunk in, just talking about what God had done in his life. And just the whole idea that stuck in my head, obviously, which is the theme of the song, is somebody who's basically a drug addict, alcoholic, into the party scene. He grew up during the Woodstock era of music, even well into his adult years, had a family. And Steve came to the point one night when he was drunk and high and everything with his family in the next room, and decided he was tired of his life being like that, and he was going to end his life. Mm-hmm. And God stepped in and interrupted him. And I just thought, that has to be a story. And I remember telling him as we were recording the phone call, and I said, hey, I really want to do something with this. And he gave me permission. And it's a lengthy song. I didn't want to just skip through it, in 3 or 4 minutes. And I really wanted it to sound dark. I wanted it to sound depressing. And I wanted it to sound in some way, some kind of desperation that somebody could relate to that's in a dark place. And even if it's not necessarily drugs or alcohol related, I know that we've got depression everywhere. The people that have heard it that have told me that it definitely gave them those feelings and reminded them of what that felt like when they were wanting to end their life. And my prayer the whole time since I've done that song is that somebody will hear it and they will just make them stop and think, maybe my life is worth something. I know it doesn't answer every question out there related to suicide, because there's probably people that say, well, how come my brother you know, ended his life if God wanted him to live. You know, I can't answer those questions. You know, I don't have that experience to really know how to answer that. But I just really wanted it to offer somebody hope who maybe feels like their life is not worth living.
So you enjoy doing this diverse range of topics, like you say, because you have the bright, fun stuff and this being the darker. Do you prefer going one way over the other?
I guess I like variety. I think to address certain topics in life, you have to go dark, because I think even in our Christian life and our Christian experience, you know, there's going to be so many things that we experience that other people don't, or other people are experience that we don't. And I really think that's why God created the church, was for us to connect and be a part of one body, as word says, and we learn from each other, we grow, and the isolation is not the answer. We both could probably name people that we know that aren't with us anymore because they felt like their life wasn't living. But as far as just going dark or being positive, I feel like we have to address those topics in the church to be relevant and not brush them under the carpet. So I guess I do like the diversity of different topics.
Just last week, The Antidote aired your version of the Mortal song in Flash, The Word Is Alive. Now, I know that Mortal has had a huge influence in the Christian music scene. And lyrically, that's really a superb song. What made you want to record it?
Pretty much from the first time I heard it, I remember thinking, wow, that is like the coolest thing I've ever heard. In my brain, I was thinking it says everything I'd want to say in terms of a song that said basically when the whole world is going bad, something good is still happening type of theme. But even when I didn't hear that song for several years of my life and I came back to it, it was almost like it was the first time I heard it again. And Gyro and Jerome, the guys who pretty much were Mortal, I just think they had a great way of communicating that with the lyrics. And it was a very intimidating task. I never would have thought really even just a few years ago that I would have done it. But going after something difficult was definitely beneficial for me. And I just, you know, hope that people enjoy it when they hear it.
Did you tell me something about wanting to go and see Mortal play?
Yeah, it was funny the way everything has worked out. This weekend, my wife and I are going to Nashville, and we're going to see Mortal play. Never saw them when they were active in the 90s. Part of this whole thing is when you do cover songs, meaning when you're recording somebody else's song and you want to do it the legal way when it goes out on the platforms, that it's not getting blocked, that type of thing, because of the world we live in, you go and you basically pay a fee, a license to cover a song. Well, back in the spring of 2021 is when I got that license to do this song. So it was over 4 years ago. And it's just amazing to me that everything from then up till this point, it took me learning how to record music, deciding what style I wanted to go. And in that time that Mortal, being Jerome and Gyro, the two guys that pretty much make up Mortal, that they got back together during that time period and started playing again. And then when I heard that they were going to be doing really just a couple of shows, East Coast and one in Nashville, West Coast. And I was like, wow, I'm going to have this song done and I'm going to be able to go and see them play. This is just totally weird. It's like things are lining up. On top of that, you reached out to me about this song that you found. And so I was just like going, okay, something's going on here. So I'm not complaining at all.
So now here's the question. Are you going to ask the guys in Mortal to invite you up on stage to do your version?
Absolutely not. I would not want to waste everybody's time doing that. I paid to see them play. I don't want to have the pressure on me to go and make a fool of myself there. as awesome as that would be, seriously though, no, I'm not in any way. I did actually pay for a meet and greet. So I want to give them a hug and just tell them what they meant to me. And I have to believe that anybody, especially in the Christian music industry, when you made music so long ago that you got cassette tapes of stuff that you did, and you know, for whatever reason, stop playing and you come back and people want to hear you play, that has got to be an amazing feeling.
Don't dump on cassette tapes because they are on their way back.
I know, exactly. I think really it's just, I think that anybody, if you followed Christian music for a number of years and maybe you listened to it as a kid or a teenager, and even if you walked away from God and the church and everything, you hear one song and it can bring everything back. And I think that that's just the power of music and God ultimately just triggering those things that, to me, it's just always a good thing. God has given me everything through the church. Gave me my wife, my family, everything good in my life has been a benefit of the church, and not just one church building or an address. It's just that we were designed to be together. And I just encourage anybody, I don't want to get off on a tangent here, Dave, but I just think during the COVID years, I think that people found an excuse to not have to meet in person. And I think there is just no replacement for people getting together. And I mean, you see it when people go to sporting events. You know, people want to believe in something. They want to cheer. They want to celebrate. That's in our nature to want to experience that with a group of people. And I think that in a much deeper sense, the church, we want to celebrate what Christ has done with other Christians, even if we're not willing to admit it. I just think that there's no replacement for believers being together and being an encouragement to each other. Because obviously there's plenty of things to discourage us. We just got to take advantage of the things that encourage us.
Now we've left one song off the list, and now it's time to talk about it. In Flesh, the Word is Alive wasn't your only cover song.
Right.
A couple of years ago, you did a version of something from When in Rome. There's got to be a story behind that.
Well, it was coming up on my 25th year anniversary to my wife, and I thought, oh, I really want to record a song. That was a song that obviously it's not metal, it's not rock or whatever, but it's kind of in a genre that my wife and I probably liked around the same time in high school. We did not know each other in high school. We were not in the same state in high school, but as anybody who's been married long enough, there are sometimes you hear songs on the radio that you both remember when you were young, and that was kind of one of those songs that was out there. So my drummer friend, Mike Gruwell, who's an awesome drummer, he actually played drums on Die Summer Die and The Promise. He did a great job. But he helped with that. And I really just wanted it to be special for my wife. And I know that what I do is not her favorite style of music for the most part, but she definitely encourages me on what I do. And I wanted it to be special for her. And I think at first I just thought, well, I'm just going to record it for her, not do anything with it. I was like, well, if I'm going to spend the time and money doing this, I might as well just put it out there. So I've gotten good feedback. So I'm glad that people can enjoy it.
I'm glad that the two of you can actually mesh with music. My wife, if she likes it, I could probably care less.
Right.
If I like it, she'll absolutely hate it.
Yeah. I understand that completely.
Okay, so now you and I have covered the entire Wayne's discography. You've brought in several music styles on your songs, so you got to tell us, what will we be hearing next?
I really have always liked edgy, guitar-driven songs with electronic elements. A lot of that is probably, the 90s were my 20s, and there was a lot going on in that decade that I really loved what was going on with the Nine Inch Nails and the Rob Zombies and a lot of darker stuff that was out there without, being depressing with lyrics and everything. And so I've always just kind of liked doing it. One, because to me it was kind of challenging because it was more than just an acoustic guitar. And that's not my knock on anybody who just plays acoustic guitar, because those, to me, are the real musicians who can sit in a room or sit in a cafe with an acoustic guitar and be awesome. I tried it one time and I realized this is not for me. As far as the kind of the style I'm kind of shooting for, I think is kind of representative of what I've done. I'll probably do some stuff that's edgier. I don't think I want to go lighter, to be honest, but that's kind of, if that answers your question.
It does. Whatever comes up next, I'm going to appreciate hearing it. And something else I appreciate, Wayne, is for you coming for this talk about Wayne's. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. It's been awesome. I've been hearing you doing radio shows for many years, and you've always been very classy, asking great questions, and you do us all a service by highlighting bands and artists that nobody really knows about, because obviously, you know, Christian hit radio is not going to, you know, play everything. It's always great to have resources that will highlight bands and artists that are harder to find. So we definitely owe you a debt of gratitude, Dave. Thank you.
Well, that's nice. Thanks, Wayne.